This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, your host. Joining me to discuss the Battle of London Stadium, Mr. Chris Bird and Mr. Phil Shaw. Welcome.
Hello.
Trojans.
Hello.
Hello.
Gather.
It was going so well and feisty until it got to the London Stadium, and then it all went a bit wimpy.
A bit bubbly.
Mm.
Yeah, they need a new name for that. Although it's not really their stadium, is it? They're kind of borrowing it.
Let's call it the Olympic
on
Stadium.
The sly. Yeah. Then it sounds like it's in Italy.
Exactly. It sounds nicer
Germany.
Than it is. We'll just call it Westfield.
Yeah, Olympic Stadium Berlin. That's gravitas. This one, not so much. Anyway, we are pondering thoughts that mean nothing to our listeners.
For a change.
How are you, gentlemen?
I'm very well. Yeah, not bad at all.
Anything exciting in your life? Just plodding along until you die.
Pretty much, although obviously we got our shit together and sorted our Lille trip out, so I'll go to Lille and then I'll come home and die.
Okay, that's at least you got something. Go out with a bang.
Hopefully.
Phil Shaw, you come into Lille?
Oh, no, I'm not coming to Lille.
Why not? We got you into the Amsterdam game. If anybody saw that pantomime cow, that was Phil Shaw.
that trick only works once. Yeah. I'm on a UEFA watch list now.
Pantomime baguette maybe next time. What's happening in Northern Ireland? Ireland per se. Apparently you won the rugby, but does it count if you don't beat England? I don't know.
Well, this is the thing. It's like you lose the battle, but you win the war, but you're always going to win the war. So it's a bit of a hollow victory. It is.
Yeah, it does take the heart out of it, doesn't it? So it's a shame. I would follow the Six Nations a lot more avidly when I was younger. Then I've taken decades off. But now after that World Cup, I'm kind of back into it. I thank the French and the South Africans more than anybody else. For that semi-final, which set fire to the world of sport, finally showed up the Premier League for what it is. Alex, it's not sport, is it, in the purest sense? It's finance. Now everybody's on social media talking about finances all the time now, rather than sport. Strange how the game's evolved. But Villa had to evolve against West Ham because they were missing the captain, John McGinn. We will get into that. It was an Emery team sheet that actually had me a lot more positive than I thought. I was a bit pessimistic going into this game, especially after the McGinn of the 4-0 trouncing. But that team sheet showed that we actually could offer a different look. Whether it was effective in its initial incarnation is another story, but still a decent point, which we will talk about. First off, though, sponsoring the show, an old favourite, Digital Swiss Army Knife, NordVPN, which actually I had to use earlier on just before we started the show to read an American article on something because it wouldn't let me access to it. But with NordVPN, you can switch your IP address to wherever you want to be in the world, in this case, America. Also useful when abroad in Amsterdam for accessing a few accounts that are in the UK. So it also helps you access ways of watching those 3 o'clock Saturday games. They subscribe to other packages around the world by resetting your address. Also, the underlining thing is it protects your online browsing and safety. And NordVPN are giving My Old Man Said listeners a special deal, which, as well as big savings, you do get 4 months free as well, plus a 30-day money-back guarantee to try it out. One account can service 6 devices as well. So do check it out at nordvpn.com/MOMS. Moms. Right, let's have some villain news. Who's still in the medical room? It's Ramsay, isn't it?
Yeah, he's very, very much.
He should be back now, shouldn't he, after the international break?
But who knows?
So he's 2 extra weeks should solidify, because he was sounded like it was touch and go, but surely those 2 weeks will see him good and he'll be back raring to go.
Yeah, hopefully. We need him.
I'm not too sure. Either Emery's sick of being asked about Ramsay or there's something more, because he just went after the game. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Normally you would say, oh yeah, back after the international break. Carlos, he was on the bench, wasn't he?
Yes.
So he's not as bad as we first feared.
No.
So in terms of defensive, centre-backs, it's just Mings, isn't it? And we're back... back up and running. Buendia, a few videos of him running around, so it looks like he'll be ready for pre-season at the latest.
Yeah, I think Emery said they'd like to have him back training with the squad towards the end of the season. We'll see whatever that means.
But in terms of actually getting on the field, I'm going for pre-season there. Villa's 4-0 win over Ajax, very convincing in the second half. Some great goals, actually. That was more a game of clinical finishing, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to the first leg.
Oof.
Villa will now play Lille of France, fourth in the French league at the moment. Stern test, probably as stern as they get, for different reasons, I think. I think this is probably one of the most technically accomplished teams left in the tournament. But if Villa have any designs of winning this tournament, this is the kind of team you should be beating in these final stages. Then a real wildcard semi-final awaits if we get through Lille, either Fenerbahce or Olympiacos. That will bring, it's quite exciting, that game.
Yeah, presuming Olympiacos and Fenerbahce don't burn each other down and then it's just a bye to the final.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be a feisty one, that, isn't it?
Yeah, be interesting, that one. I still can't get over the fact that Olympiacos lost their home leg 4-1 and then went away and won 6-1. I mean, the coach of Tel Aviv must be like, I think he's under pressure now. You'd resign if you let that one slip. International break coming up. So good time, actually, I think, in a Villa context.
I think so, yeah.
Especially not losing that West Ham game. That was the vital thing there. The Ajax win and the West Ham point went a long way, and the Fulham win against Spurs went a long way to erasing the nightmare that happened at Villa Park last week.
Yeah, big time.
Speaking of international break, Luiz is back in the Brazilian squad, potentially feature against England and Spain. At least he doesn't have to do the long haul there. Diaby is back in the French squad. McGinn, Martinez, Tillemans, all away. Konsa and Watkins are away as well. Konsa's had some shaky games, but that normally means you're a starter,
aren't you?
Well, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not playing or if you're having a shaky period, then you're going to get in Southgate's England team. Also away, Cash, Gauci, Australia, Olsen, Sweden, Zaniola, Italy, the usual crew. Pau Torres not featuring in Spain squad, and Bailey has been disciplined at the moment, isn't he? So he's not in the Jamaican squad. Those two, actually, that's pretty good. At least they won't be injured, hopefully.
Well, it gives us a chance to get Pau Torres properly fit, give him a rest, and sort of wrap Bailey in cotton wool, because it's going to be a big run-in for him.
Yeah. Under-21s drew 2-2 with Leicester. Have they got they've got another baggie coming,
apparently,
haven't they?
So, yeah, they just keep on coming on the production line. Kellen Quinn apparently joining from West Brom this time for around about $1 million. He'll join next season as a scholar.
Yeah, all these baggies, they're all coming for, you know, $750 to $1 million. It's not bad money West Brom making on this conveyor belt, but since we took all their staff, you'd think, why haven't we set up our own conveyor belt yet? Or are we still a couple of years away from getting the right age?
Possibly,
in.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the women's team won 2-1 at Everton, and they sit seventh in the WSL. So a bit of a mid-table affair, Villa Women, after pretty much a disastrous start, which completely compromised the early ambitions of what they were looking to do. 3 points. 10 Premier League clubs, including Villa, voted against the new $900 million deal, which would trickle down to the EFL. This is from the improved TV package money. Top flight clubs were considering legal action if forced to pay an unpalatable and unworkable settlement. This is essentially about defending business interests, isn't it? I joked at the top of the show, it's all about business now, and it goddamn well is, isn't it?
Yeah, so I think a lot of the stances of some of the clubs is that in any other business, you wouldn't be forced to pay a rival business in the same industry money to compete against you. And essentially in football, of course, that money has the potential to be used to try and take your place in the Premier League. And then, of course, the knock-on effect of that is potentially disastrous. Now, there was a proposal to pay, I think it was $836 million over 5 years, and then add that to $110 in solidarity payments and another $40 in youth development. So there's a lot of money floating around there. But some of the Premier League heads have basically said that a lot of the problems that are happening outside of the Premier League in terms of EFL teams, I think Sheffield Wednesday were used as one of the prime examples, that's nothing to do with Premier League money dripping down. That's clubs being terribly run.
Yeah, overspending.
Yeah, as opposed to funding from higher up, which that's one of the bits I do actually agree with, that why should clubs bail out teams that have been badly run?
Yeah, and you know, this is where fans, when they start saying that Terrace View and lower grounds is all about making us competitive, an elite club, that's bullshit. It's all about the TV money. And this is the big, big, big bucks. I mean, match day revenue was like 10% up to 15%, depending on the, you know, which stadium. But in this case, you do need a trickle down because it's a different universe, Premier League, compared to the rest of them. Also, it makes sense money to be dripping down in terms of like youth development, because as we see, Villa are like, you know, cherry picking off the baggies, and it does help the foundation of the pyramid of sustaining the game. You don't want clubs disappearing. At the same time, you don't want to see clubs ran badly. I mean, we've had our own experience recently where we, you know, we were close to administration. That was put out so quickly that I don't think the penny really dropped to a lot of fans, and especially more casual fans, what a predicament we were actually in under the Dr. Tony situation.
Yeah, we were very fortunate.
Point number two, the Cameroon Football Federation has banned 62 players due to age fraud. I feel that we've had this one in before a few years ago. I think this is...
It's continuing. It's not going away, this one.
An ongoing trickery, witchcraft that is going on here. Essentially, this is people pretending they're 17 years old and they're early 45. Is that it in a nutshell?
I mean, kind of, yeah. Essentially, their federation are... they found a 17-year-old in Rigobert Song's squad for the African Cup of Nations that was obviously overage, and then obviously went digging and found a load more. You know, we definitely have mentioned this before, because there was 44 players in 2022 were summoned in front of the federation. 6 months later, in January 23, there were another 21 members of an under-17 squad were disqualified over the issue. So this is a long-running problem in African football at large.
I do remember. It's a bit like, for example, to give it some context, it's like Aston Villa asked to put their squad in for the Europa Conference League. And of course, you can have an infinite amount of under-18 players, can't you?
Yeah, homegrown players, yeah.
Homegrown youth academy. So it's like basically saying, yeah, Zaniola, he's 15.
that would explain a lot.
Yeah, it would explain everything. They would like, I don't think so. And then you show them some like clips and they go, oh, okay, yeah.
Oh, strappy teenager, got you.
Duran, yeah, he's 14. You know, basically lying just so we can get as many players in so we don't have to cut anybody out. Callum Chambers, yep, he's 18 years old. He did miss the cut, didn't he, old
Chambers? Yeah, we dented him.
Yeah, poor old Chambers. Point number three, Manchester City are going green. Would that be fair to say? They're going to be the largest producers of renewable power in world football. Is this to charge up Haaland even more?
Well, what it is, they've put plans in, and of course, being Manchester City, they aren't expected to have planning permission turned down. It's a formality for 11,000 solar panels at their training complex and the Dewey Stadium, the home of their women's and academy teams. Their director of sustainability, Pete Bradshaw, said the plans would completely offset the power required to run the day-to-day operations of the City Football Academy, and they would become one of the largest producers of self-supplied renewable energy.
Good plan.
Well, that is a good plan. I mean, no shortage of a charge at Manchester City then.
Is this, they're going to have 116 now, are they?
Hey!
Boom, yeah. Boom.
Yeah.
11,000 solar panels to charge up, to power up those
lawyers.
115 charges.
Yeah.
There you go.
And pay the legal fees.
Yeah, solar panel farm to pay the legal fees of what's to come. At least they're preparing for it. Right. This game had danger written all over it. As soon as Spurs put the fourth goal in and McGinn was off, it was, oh shit. I was talking about cliff faces, Villa falling off one. Luckily, the Amsterdam situation got through it. Good result as well. Gave us a bit of conviction that we were still a decent team, and that was a bit of a blip. But this was the ultimate test because West Ham, fellow European travellers, tough team to beat on the day, can probably beat anybody. That's why they're doing well in Europe when their mind's focused. But Villa were without McGinn and changing that back line pretty much every week, which is never a good recipe for success in my book. If you cast your mind back to one of the fundamental reasons that Emery's team was successful at the back end of last season was that defence, which registered consecutive amounts of clean sheets. They're almost up there with the mighty Lincoln City of this season, who in the last seven games have conceded one goal. And in the last three games, they've scored 16 goals. I think they're their best team in England at the moment. God, can you imagine if Villa closed out the last nine games with like conceding like two goals in nine games and whether like three or four, five or six nil wins? Oh God, I feel the stress lifting already just at the thought. But no, this was a tough test. Interesting, Ward-Prowse didn't start. Maybe a bit of a hangover from midweek when they slaughtered Freiburg, SC Freiburg 5-0, turning around a 1-0 deficit.
Thanks for that, guys.
But West Ham had only won two out of seven games off the back of European games, while Villa had won five out of nine following their European excursions. We've scored 15 to their eight in those games, but you know, there's probably a differing level of opposition. Although, to be fair, we've had a pretty much Europa League level standard of opposition, haven't we?
I'd say so, with someone like Legia Warsaw and AZ Alkmaar, who've played Champions League.
Ajax.
Yeah.
Freiburg must be shit if West Ham put five past them.
Phil's not convinced by Freiburg. Or the German hopes of getting the coefficient sorted out. I mean, that is, people are still saying, oh, 80%, 70%. I'm sorry, but there's two head-to-heads there, which are pretty much 50-50 fights. Arsenal, Bayern, Leverkusen, West Ham.
Too close to call.
And yeah, you wouldn't be surprised if the German teams won both of them. And pedigree, I don't know, you can't shit on West Ham because they did win a European trophy, last season, which suggests they know what they're doing in this kind of arena. Anyway, the good news for Villa was Watkins was fit. It looked a bit dicey when he came off against Ajax. Even Carlos, as we mentioned, was on the bench, but Longley returned to the starting lineup. And there was certainly, I think what was in Emery's mind was, let's forget about the back five. But we've got a problem because we are lacking a bit of tenacity on the pitch, especially with McGinn gone. Also, West Ham pretty physical. So if you looked at the players that did start, you've got Konsa coming in for Cash at right back. You've got Rodgers in there, 6'3". You've got Duran up top next to Watkins. So when it came to defending set pieces, at least on paper, we would have a bit more about us. But also it was quite exciting to see Duran start up there, and his performance against Ajax probably merited it as well.
Yeah, it was a bit of an eyebrow raising one when the team sheet went up. You kind of thought, oh, we're kind of going for this. This is an interesting one. Yeah. How's this going to look? In reality, now you see it and you go, is it 4-4-2? Is it 4-3-3? Is it, who knows?
Didn't really pan out though, did it, the first half. in such gung-ho fashion as we were expecting. But, you know, I even tweeted, oh, the attack seems to be the best form of defence. But no, defence was the worst form of attack.
Well, it looked like it might be for about the first 10, 15 minutes, and then attack went into defence, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Ingrained on my mind, and perhaps a lot of West Ham fans' minds, because they're still moaning about Moyes, is you do expect West Ham to play football, but there's something functional percentage wise and direct about them, isn't there? And physical about them.
Yeah, and their fans aren't particularly happy with the style of football they play, I suppose, because they have a, or generally down the years, as you said, they've always played good football, but they're not at the moment. But they are getting results, and they're, you know, they're in the top seven, for God's sake.
It's a style of football that Villa have struggled against.
Yeah, yeah, yes. Very attritional.
Villa actually started well because the first real chance of the game came to Watkins. He was played through in that position, just sort of wide right, and he just had a first-time shot at Areola, but he saved well with his feet. We've seen Watkins score those ones a couple of times, and it wasn't long before you thought there's danger out in this left-hand side, because Rodgers, who wasn't bad in the first half, him and Moreno, just there doesn't seem to be much understanding between the two of them yet, which is understandable because one's been out injured most of the season and the other one's just a new transfer in January. So the communication and sort of like the teamwork that you would have seen between Moreno and Ramsey just isn't there. And Kufal and Bowen are probably West Ham's two best players, and they were both getting in behind and getting plenty of space down that right hand side.
Moreno was playing quite narrow, wasn't he? And it was almost like Rodgers, it was his job to take on the wide man cover the wide man. And there was times when we got exposed there because there was nobody covering the outball, the wide man.
Now, it was another difficult assignment for Rodgers. He's had a couple of those now since he's arrived, sort of defensively. He didn't really get a chance to get on the ball too much. That said, when he did, I thought he drives you quite well. He just didn't get enough of an opportunity to push the team forward in the other direction. But West Ham slowly grew into the game, sort of after about a quarter of an hour, and then they got on top. And frankly, Villa's sort of distribution out from the back was really shonky, which, you know, against Ajax, it was pretty razor sharp, albeit because Ajax's press was poor. West Ham realised pretty quickly after sort of 15, 20 minutes that they could actually go after Villa. And of course, you know, the ball wasn't sticking with Watkins, Duran up front. He didn't have McGinn being able to back into people and lay the ball off. I thought Louise's passing in the first half.
No, Kamara there as well.
Yeah.
And a rotation of defensive lineups is making it hard to play out the back. And it has been really patchy the last few
months.
I mean,
we
got to a stage where you go back to the end of the year, Manchester City, around that period, where we were like slick as hell. I mean, it was like,
that's incredible.
Really good. And we've regressed so badly because I don't think there's familiarity there anymore. It's nobody knows who's playing.
Exactly, and it must be off-putting whenever you're Pal Torres, Konza, Longley, and they get the ball and they look up and it's like, well, Kamara's not there, McGinn's not there, Louise is beside me, so I can't really give it to him, and you're looking to advance it, and it's like you've Rodgers, Duran and Watkins up there, so the only choice is sort of like a hopeful punt up to them or into their feet, and then West Ham were just either going through the back of the Villa player and getting the ball or just nipping in ahead, and it was just, it just sort of like became sort of like a tide that they were always going to score. They were getting far too much away. But before that, Villa did have a penalty shout, which on another week you would have saw it given.
Yeah, which when you look back at it, it's almost like Bailey's played for it.
Yeah. 100%.
But at the same time, that's a cynical view. But also at the same time, has he flicked it to go past him? Because if he has, then it's a penalty because it's obviously blocked the ball. There was obviously two West Ham goals chalked off for handball, but this was a clearer handball than anything that else happened in the game, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it, with the rules that if an attacking player accidentally handles the ball in the build-up to it going in, it's just chalked off instantly. Whatever it is you've done, if it hits your hand, it's done. The Bailey one, the guy's left his hand out. He's almost put his hand out to sort of gesticulate to his partner where to be. Bailey just sort of flicked it up onto his hand, and I wonder if the ref's gone, but it's so close. It's either ball to hand or you're trying to hit his hand.
The hand is, it's a natural position, I think, is the argument, isn't it? Because he's not like, it's not hand to ball.
But you have seen them given hand.
Yeah, you've seen ones given for less. So it's just another one that, and then of course West Ham goes straight up the other end, and that right hand side of West Ham, left hand side of Villa leads to another goal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good cross, isn't it, to be fair, from Kufal, but it's poor from Villa in the build-up. And, of course, Antonio stoops low, gets in front of Konza, who defensively hasn't, I don't think, been at his best for a few weeks since he's come back.
Konza should be in front of him there.
He's got to be aggressive 100%. There.
And blocking him off or something like that.
Yeah, and Martinez can't do anything about it.
The first thing you get taught as a centre-back is goal side on things like that. Mm-hmm. You don't let him come inside you.
I think maybe with Konsa, similar, as you said earlier, to all the chopping and changing, he's been playing at right back sometimes, centre back, and I think they just need to bed him in and go, right, you and Torres are going to be centre back, as you've been all through the year, really, and you stay there, or Carlos comes in and you're playing right back. But we seem to just be chopping and changing so much, as you said, it's difficult to have combinations.
On paper, the stats geeks and whatever will go, oh, what defensive formation are we playing this week? And like, oh, yeah, I think I'd probably play Konsa right back and blah, blah, blah. Or, oh, yeah, next week I'd swap it around with this and that. In the real world, it doesn't work like that, does it? You need to play regularly, especially like centre backs. And then it's a bigger thing in terms of the whole back four. Need to know, especially when you're playing this high line as well. It's familiarity with each other, and especially when you're playing it out the back in that way as well. You know, for Konsa, obviously his preferred partner is Mings, just because it fit together so well, as we saw at the back end of last season, and as numerous clean sheets testify. So that is a real problem. There needs to be a firmer set idea of what the Villa back four is, but I don't think we've got the exact right blend in terms of the Premier League, because I think Mings is a kind of a monster in that respect.
But if you don't have the right blend in the middle, the next thing you do is you stop the cross, and that's three in recent weeks. Yeah. McTominay, Madison last week, and then this week, Antonio. Crosses from exactly the same position on the pitch.
Yeah, we do not look, sometimes when we're defending, we do not look like a top four team, do we?
Not even close.
And we played ourselves into trouble. West Ham didn't have to do anything. We created West Ham's best chances, really. Or we certainly got the ball rolling on them.
Yeah,
put ourselves under pressure time and time again.
I mean, we were lucky to go in 1-0 down at half time, really. It was kind of, I wouldn't say it was necessarily backs to the wall, but it was a real just sort of clusterfuck to watch them trying to kind of get themselves organised at the back. Because West Ham, it wasn't like they were really going after us. Because I think they were kind of half cautious that, if, like a lot of teams, if you go after Villa and press and it doesn't come off, we can just play through you. And then, of course, we're onto you with pace. But Villa just weren't playing through them. The passing game was causing Villa all sorts of problems. And then, of course, they came out in the second half, having fortunately Emery made the changes. He brought Diaby and Cash on for Longley and Duran, which was good to see him be so proactive at half time.
Yeah, the first wave of changes. And he is a proactive in terms of substituting, isn't he?
He's tended to be
running around.
But then, you know, within a couple of minutes of restart, the ball's in the back of the net, and you're like, oh, for fuck's sake, Villa, another disastrous start after half time. It's a terrible goal from everyone's point of view. Martinez, for once, doesn't come out.
Over.
Yeah, it was Villa get away with one there. Obviously, the ball's whipped in, and Martinez really, I don't know if he's pushed or he flaps at it. I'm going to go with the latter, to be honest. It wasn't his brightest moment. And fortunately, it obviously goes in off Antonio's hand. VAR rules that one out. So Villa are very lucky to get away with it. But they did grow into the second half at that point.
Yeah, I think if there's no VAR there, normally a referee would probably give you that one.
Yeah.
Especially with Martinez's reputation, they'll be going, yeah, he's trying to pull the wool over my eyes on this one.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely VAR saved us in that respect, even though it was, you know, a handball.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Yeah, and then there was the second wave of changes when Dean and Zaniolo come on for Moreno on Rodgers. That was about the 63rd minute. And I have to say, whenever those changes come on, Villa did look a bit more balanced. They sort of begin to control the game territory wise as West Ham sort of like retreated back. And you could really tell West Ham were maybe thinking 1-0 might do us here. I don't see Villa doing anything, because they took off Antonio and brought on Johnson, who's a defender, leaving them just with Bowen really as the lone man up front, sort of supporting
when
Bukudis.
Did Ward-Prowse come on?
He was later than that. He came on after the equaliser, so then the re went for it again.
Yeah, I was surprised Luca Dean didn't come on at half time, actually, because I didn't think I thought Moreno was fairly ineffective. I mean, one play was you could have brought Luca Dean on and then played Moreno further up
as a winger.
Yeah, instead of Rodgers. So you've got a bit of defensive solidity with two fullbacks, but also, you know, Moreno is still useful going forward, although his delivery recently, he hasn't been offering that much.
I think
Dean has been a bit more dynamic in that respect.
I think Dean has been so unlucky since Moreno's come back to lose his place in the team. I mean, it's great having him as a rotation, but in my eyes, our first choice left back at the moment is probably Dean in terms of balancing the team. You look at how we were playing at the start of the season.
I don't think there's any problem about it.
Yeah. Moreno gives you some punch, and I think if you want to go for a game, fair enough, bring him on. But I think Dean balances you, and he feels a lot more defensively sound. He probably isn't going to give you the dynamism. That said, I don't think Moreno's really been offering the dynamism he did last year either, really. I think he's probably been missing Buendia and Ramsey.
Yeah, I feel a bit sorry for Moreno because he gets injured and then he eventually comes back to this Villa team that are playing a completely different style of football. So this is probably why he doesn't look the same anymore. I mean, you have ball-playing Pau Torres beside him, who has formed a good partnership with Dean, basically not having to do what Moreno did and burst forward, because Torres's passes are getting the ball advanced rather than the run. And then he's sort of like between positions at the moment, Moreno. He's just not himself. So there's a tweak needed there somewhere.
But the changes worked, fortunately.
The cash change was a big one
as well. Cash was excellent. I think all of a sudden Villa realised we can hurt these down the, we're probably in trouble down the left, but we can really hurt them down the right when you had Cash, Diaby, Bailey, and Cash was really getting forward, to be fair to him. And he was carrying the ball a lot more. I think they were playing into Diaby. I thought Diaby was excellent when he came on. And obviously he gets the assist for the equaliser, which we'll move on to in a second. And Bailey, I think they all, sort of got at West Ham. They realised that West Ham are going to play deep. We're going to have to engage them at the contact point and just carry the ball, which obviously Bailey and Diaby can do very, very well. We weren't going to win that one or get anything out of the game by trying to play sort of passing football and little pretty 1-2s around the penalty area. It wasn't going to work. We were going to have to get around the sides, which fortunately, we did.
Yeah.
The good news was the changes were made early. So you could see there was a seismic shift in how the game was going. But the good news was, because they were made early, there was still plenty of time on the clock.
Yeah.
So Villa started to knock a few bad decisions here and there, like, when Cash perhaps should have shot. Konsa had a chance, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the Cash, when he was in despair after it, because I think he knew himself, he looked around and was going like, somebody should have made a run, somebody should have made a run.
There was nobody there, wasn't there?
Yeah, he should have just smashed it.
Yeah, and he's good at smashing it when it gets into that position. Just pretend you're crossing it and it'll probably go into the net.
He'd have probably put it through the goalkeeper in reality, because it was quite close. Yeah. He thought he could have gone through the goalie or over him. He'd put it into the roof of the net.
Tillemans had a... Was it kind of a token gesture shot?
It was all right.
It wasn't bad.
He hit it well, but I mean, the keeper, to save he should make, gets the... But if you don't... This is the problem with Villa. If you don't like, buy a ticket to the raffle, you're not going to win. They haven't been shooting enough, so more shots the better.
But we had the Diaby-Bailey show linking up, and that's what kind of changed things, I thought.
Well, we saw it on the Thursday night game against Ajax, having the pair of them on the pitch. When they're both in form, they give you pace, directness... They give you a dynamism, and they actually scheme quite well together. They're a little bit more unpredictable, and that's where the equaliser kind of came from. Diaby picks it up on the corner of the penalty area, drives at the fullback, pulls it back, and who's arriving from deep? Mr. Zaniolo, who's been
jogging through London Stadium,
just passing through.
All right, lads. Oh, here we go. Wind
in his hair. Yep, everything
perfectly timed. Didn't break stride. Toe poke. And at that point, you think, right, game on.
Yeah. Without any disrespect to any other player in the pitch, he's probably the only person in the pitch that would have finished that the way he did, just without breaking stride and just toe-poking it through the goalkeeper's leg.
Maybe he is the heir elect to Bertrand Traoré. Same kind of role. Just do something random.
I mean, that's the third time he's...
Vital goals. I mean...
He's popping up with big goals, isn't he?
Yeah. You got to remember, his goal in the Europa Conference League, that got us out of the old playoff round.
Saved us... 180 minutes worth of extra football.
Saved Villa fans a few hundred quid travelling as well to some European city.
Yeah, I've no idea why he gets such a hard time. It's so harsh on him, isn't it?
You're looking for consistency from him because there's clearly lots of attributes of a good player. You just, yeah. I hope it kickstarts him. But
you know, I keep saying this and writing about this at various places, is if you've got players that are suspended or are injured, you've still got players. I think I said this in Match Club where I said, no, don't be a bum. Just there's so many Premier League players that make it to the Premier League and then they're just sitting on the bench and they play 20 minutes every month and they're earning 80 grand and then they'll just disappear, probably go off on loan to Turkey or something. But there is an opportunity here at Villa. We're in the race for top four. We're in a European tournament. Now, Zaniola doesn't actually have to do that much. He can pop up again with a goal in the semi-final, for example, or get a goal that gets his vital points to fend off Spurs at the end.
Yep.
And he builds legacy and he'll be remembered well. So it's, you know, it's great to see him and Duran chipping in. And you want more of that in these last nine games in the league and the final furlongs of the Europa Conference League. Because they're capable. They've got attributes that's why, you know, that's why they're here. They just need to be turned on.
And they're international players.
You know, same with Diaby as well. You know, I mean, if you've got Diaby pairing and actually playing with confidence, I think is the main thing.
Yeah.
He's a different kettle of fish.
I mean, he's had a great week, hasn't he? Hopefully that week, you know, and maybe a slightly unexpected recall to the France squad. You know, the goal against Ajax, I hope, is a bit of a weight lifted. Took that goal fantastically, by the way.
Yeah.
Really good assist. And I think he put in a really good night's work against Ajax. You hope that you think, right, that can really kickstart him, because if you're going to maybe not have, you know, other guys around, maybe if Ramsey's not as there as much as you want, especially once you get McGinn back, he gives you a slightly different way of playing. Same as Duran. If you've got these guys coming off the bench or coming in and out the side, as long as everybody's impacting the season in certain ways, you don't mind. You mentioned Traore, of course, last year. Yeah, we won the game against Forest, won the game against Leicester with the unbelievable goal. And you think, great, you've probably won us 6 points there.
Because the key thing is here with these substitutions and these players and the roles that they can have, even off the bench, is you're not just bringing them on because, like, years of old at Villa in recent history where it's like, oh, we need to rest the good guy and let's bring this chap on. You're not expecting anything. These are tactical substitutions. These are to do something different because the players coming on have got ability.
Yeah.
And that's refreshing and it's good to have in the locker nowadays.
It's good when it comes off as well.
Yeah.
But then things changed again in the match and West Ham brought on Ward-Prowse finally in the 85th minute and Cresswell. And I think then from the 85th minute to the end, we sort of got the game that we were expecting from the start.
Yeah.
It was a bit more of a firefight then in the last 15 minutes.
Which is interesting because, you know, people always do the lazy thing. Oh, you're playing in Europe. Oh, you must suffer from fatigue. And they'll use it straight away, any excuse if your team's losing or get beat. But this game really livened up in the last 10 minutes or so. And we were expecting almost a red card. There were so many candidates for it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, pick your victim.
I know. Luiz was lucky enough because he got an elbow from Kudos and then he responded by two elbows right in his back. So pretty obvious
Zaniola
as well.
Zaniola threw the ball away when he was on a yellow as well. And I think a West Ham player had been done for that earlier on.
Yep. But the real big moments came at Villa's end, unfortunately. There was a block that Cash did. Now, Cash gets plenty of stick for his bad positioning, but he was definitely in the right place at the right time in this one because the ball was crossed to Ward-Prowse, or just sort of cut back to Ward-Prowse in just about the penalty spot, and was heading to the roof of the net, and Cash just got in and brilliant block. That's a match-saving block he did.
He actually celebrated it, didn't he?
Yeah, it was a great moment.
And it wasn't one of these celebrations that Arsenal players do and high-five each other when they save a corner or something like that there. This was a proper one. He deserved a celebration for it.
Speaking of celebrations, I did actually find it funny what the club did on social media where they counted the amount of celebrations John Duran did in that.
Oh, Ajax. Yeah. Was it 14 in the end?
I think it was 16.
It was about three or four love hearts, weren't there?
Yeah, it was quite funny, actually. And then, now this is interesting, the VAR drama.
The drama that didn't need to be drama, you mean?
Watching it, you just sit, you go, oh no, and you do miss Mings in those situations where he just rises above everybody and just fucking heads it out.
Or clears everybody out.
Yeah.
You know, here it was what we feared in terms of being a bit soft. Ball ends up in the net. You're thinking, oh, for fuck's sake. The first reaction is it's a goal, game over, isn't it? It's more this defence has just crumbled under that.
under the one bit of pressure they've been under, really. They're two balls in the box there to deal with and fuck all else, really.
But then you think, well, there's a bit of a melee there. Maybe there's something in there. If VAR wants to be pedantic, maybe we'll get away with
this.
The
Villa players thought there was straight away, to be fair. They were straight away.
Yeah, they were like adamant, wasn't they? Yeah. But I think it was within about the second or third angle they show. They show the real angle that at the end is the one that decides it, which they show the referee. And as soon as I saw that, you know, tweeted, I said, in my eyes, that's handball 100%, because the ball's going away, it hits his hand, and then suddenly it's going towards the goal, and I think it comes off the other guy's hand on the floor as well. And you think that's handball 100%, whatever interpretation you want. That ball, whether he means it or not, is irrelevant, because it's travelling away from the goal initially, or parallel with it, hits the hand, and then it's going towards the goal over the line. So it's 100% a handball. So I felt, as soon as I saw that, I thought, if they do their job, that's not a goal. But it just went on. They showed about 100 angles. I don't know if they were trying to go through every incident that happened, because apparently Konsa was potentially fouled as well, and there was two handballs for the price of one. Needless. I've got nothing against West Ham fans recently, and you felt for them because it just went on and on and on. In the stadium I'm talking about, at home, you know, you see that clear view, the final frame that the referee sees, and you think that's not a goal, but it just goes on and on and on, totally unnecessarily. If they've seen that view, what's going on? Why aren't they calling it straight off? Because you blow up quick on those things, and then fans don't get antsy about it, do they? But if you let it linger like that, then they get antsy.
Strange. And the kind of thing that it doesn't look good in general, not necessarily just for the game or the officials, but it makes, you know, the Premier League look bad when you think this isn't, it's not even that borderline, really. You know, the first one, the Antonio one, is a bit more open to interpretation, you would say. This one, it's like, well, yeah, that's handball.
Yeah.
But it makes it more frustrating. Of course, the longer it goes on, the more the West Ham fans probably fear the worst. And of course, the booing slowly builds because they kind of realise what's probably going on. They're thinking, well, the longer this goes on, the more likely it is to get chalked off.
Because we were discussing it, wasn't we, in Match Club? We were saying, well, I said, I'm getting ready for the West Ham fan boos, because you knew, once you saw that angle, there's no way this is not.
Yeah, especially because the first wide has been disallowed.
And they kept on going on and on and on. I mean, it builds.
Why does it take so long to get the referee to go and have a look at him himself? Because at the end of the day, it's him making the decision. So what, there's at least 4 or 5 minutes passed before Jared Gilt goes over to look at the monitor, and then they show him the correct angle.
Yeah.
Just bizarre.
Strange use of the protocol. Just speed it all up and go, you might want to have a look at this. We've got the angle for you. Check it here.
Yeah.
Done. Do it in half the time.
Easily half the time, yeah. So it has less impact on the actual game, because I think fans buy into a decision if it's rectified quickly, but if it goes on like that, and it unnecessarily so, it just makes a farce of the game. And it takes away the actual moment, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's obviously the moment for the Villa fans of relief.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't spoken to anybody who was in the stadium, but I can imagine in the ground it was pretty dramatic, because of course you aren't getting all the replays, etc.
Start of the game.
Well, thanks to Vicky and Match Club, she reminded us Emery is still unbeaten in London. Well, they do have Arsenal and Palace to come, so if they're still unbeaten after those two, I think we'll be all right. There's another stat that sort of backs up your case for the squad being needed. Only Liverpool, Arsenal and Newcastle have had more goal involvements from substitutes in the Premier League this season than Aston Villa.
Ooh.
With Liverpool 22, Arsenal 18 and Newcastle 18, Villa have 17. So another couple, and they could have the most goal involvements from substitutes in the league, showing the value of the squad.
Fantasy Premier League Villa player of the game.
Well, it's a tie. Poor old Zaniolo couldn't, even scoring the equalising goal, he couldn't be the number one guy, because Martinez also had 5 points. Ooh. If only Zaniolo didn't get himself booked, he would have been in the lead.
Discipline, Zaniolo, discipline. Although he was lucky not to get the red in the end. It would have been harsh.
A 14-year-old, what do you want to do?
Yeah, still got a lot to learn. I don't know why his parents are letting him dye his hair at that age. It's disgraceful. Thank you very much, everybody who joined us for Match Club for the game. It's always the dramatic ones.
It is, actually, yeah.
Drawn together for a special thanks this week to Steve Walton and also Adam Zreta. I think it's a silent Z, isn't it? For continuing and signing up to be a My Old Man Said member. When you're a My Old Man Said member, you get ad-free shows, so you can listen to the show how the football gods intended it. without sponsorships and ads. And you get extra shows as well. We have actually a reaction to the Ajax game to put out. We did one of our trip there as well last week. More of those to come. And you get to join Match Club as well, our 24/7 inner sanctum. And we do meet up online for the away games where everybody can join in, which is essentially a big live podcast. It's in the moment. Yeah, something lost in society nowadays. Everybody wants to watch things. They can just watch it on demand, can't they? But it's good to have some, like, you're either there or you're square.
Yeah, miss out.
If you want to get closer to the show and My Old Man Said, then this is the inner sanctum. So please do go to myoldmansaid.com and check out the membership details there via the membership link. Thank you very much. Right, Media Muppets. Right, Phil, anything in the trough this week?
Well, there was an interesting question asked of Maurizio Pochettino at the Chelsea press conference. They asked him, do Chelsea want European football? And there was a reason given why they might not. Matt Love, the Daily Telegraph Villa fan, he reported that Pochettino was asked whether or not they would want to compete in next season's Conference League economically and because of UEFA restrictions, because obviously UEFA look at things more strictly than the Premier League do for financial ones.
In terms of their, they have a, what's the rule? The percentage of wages, is it 80%? There's an actual rule which the Premier League may copy.
It's 70, isn't it, UEFA, I think?
Yeah, it's like weighting of wages, yeah, 70, which I think this is what this is alluding to. Chelsea's wages are, I think they're well over 70% anyway.
Yeah, I think they're well over 70% of how much they've spent. So they asked this about Pochettino because they're looking at it financially again, just to re-emphasise how it's a business now. And he said, Pochettino came back with, if we qualify for the Conference League, we need to accept and respect the competition. Sounds like they've been handed down a punishment by qualifying for the Conference League and to go and try and win the competition, of course, but we need to accept the reality. I'm not going to say anything. It is an international competition. So it's sort of, it's where football's at now. Are they at the point where they could like qualify this and go, no, sorry, I wouldn't want to enter it? Can you refuse to play in a European competition after qualifying for it?
No. Unless you're Manchester United with Alex Ferguson.
Yeah. Or worst case scenario, do the sort of sandbag themselves towards the end of the season and not put in 110% effort against a team like maybe Spurs that we need them to turn up against. It's just another level of intrigue.
Phil Shaw conspiracy theory.
Yes. And of course, we'll have to give special mention to the Sky Sports Premier League X or Twitter post go at halftime that went out going, are Aston Villa distracted by the Europa Conference League campaign? And a picture of Emery looking pensive and sort of ponderous, thinking.
Scratching his chin.
Yeah, because of course, that's the only reason that a team would be behind at halftime. They didn't really put the same out with Spurs the night before, did they, when Fulham were ransacking them?
Are West Ham distracted by the Europa League campaign?
Exactly.
Yes. Were Liverpool distracted by the Europa League campaign when United beat them? No.
Yeah.
Who knows?
The answer is no.
Hard no.
Yeah, resounding no.
It's just convenience narrative, isn't it? If we got beat by West Ham, you'd be going, oh yeah, well, if we wasn't, you know, it's like, well, West Ham were also in a tournament, so how's that theory work out for you? We're doing a decent job, I think, of doing the balance. And I do think if you're a big dog, you shouldn't be messing around crying about, fatigue. It's like, you just get on with it. No excuses. Emery said no excuses. I'm all about no excuses as well. So we rock on. Context, I think after last week, we were like, oh, fuck. Are we really going to balls up this season at this stage with the Spurs situation? But Fulham are knight in shining armour once again. I mean, we're running out of, I think you need two hands now to count the amount of times they've done us big favours. I mean, the first one dates back to Wembley when they beat us in the playoff and got rid of Dr. Tony. Then we've seen them tonk United, tonk Spurs.
Got Gerrard sacked.
Gave us 6 points this season.
They donate the points but take them away from our rivals. They're a great team.
I mean, just to get a result against Tottenham was a bonus. Then for it to end 3-0, it was like...
Somebody said they were considering getting a half-and-half scarf filler in Fulham.
For full force.
Probably, yeah, for full force. It's probably warranted, actually. So good luck to Fulham this season. They're doing a grand job picking up our slack. The Ajax win, just the goals, the quality, all four of those goals are great.
Yeah.
It's like you pay your money, good price to get into Ajax. You've seen four quality goals and good away support, decent enough atmosphere. Probably not as good as the first time we played Ajax, because that was more of a contest, wasn't it? And
yeah,
fans were a bit rawer, less hospitality in those days, you see. And I'm looking now at that Wolves game with a lot more optimism as a game that we can win. If we've got 4 points from these two games, in it, even if we don't get anything against City, that, considering how I felt about those three games immediately after the Spurs game, is a decent enough haul and keeps us at the races, really.
Yeah, I agree. It's a big game, Wolves, actually.
Yeah, still working out what Rodgers brings to the party and what his attributes are, because we were talking to Match Club, he's kind of tidy, but he doesn't seem to have that explosion. And we were, well, semi-joking about how he doesn't really use his physical body, does he, to what you would expect?
Not yet. I mean, obviously he's come from playing in the Championship where the, you know, the sort of the intensity and certainly the tempo is down. So if you're powerful, yeah, and you can carry the ball, you're going to be good. I think he's probably a player we're going to have to be reasonably patient with, and we might not see the best of him for, you know, till next season. But
I just thought that Rodgers almost is like his body doesn't belong to him, you know, because he's not... It's a bit like he's trying to control this body that's too big for him, because he is a physical presence, but he's like playing like he's almost playing like he's Diaby.
Yeah, he's like trying to play like he's Diaby. He doesn't. You almost, yeah, if you were built like that, you'd be like, I'm just going to flatten everything in sight here.
Because you see Duran, and you know he plays as he looks, doesn't he?
He plays like
and
a big man.
Exactly like he looks.
Rodgers is actually, and this isn't a diss on him, it's his profile is of a different player, isn't it? Of a kind of a tidy...
He's like a more physical version of Ramsey, really. So you'd think he should be really powerful as a ball carrier.
I think Ramsey's got a bit more diamondism about him, hasn't he?
Yeah.
He's got a bit more snap about him at this moment. So it's almost like he still has to be turned on to his full force.
Yeah.
His full pedigree, or he will end up at Fulham probably. But we'll see. I mean, that story of Rodgers and what Emery saw in him really, you know, needs more time to play out.
I think so. I mean, and yeah, I've seen some of the videos of him, and we've seen little cameo-y bits of him in certain games. You think if teams give him space to play in, he looks like a good player. Yeah. You know, he can really drive you. I think it's just the way some of the games have been when he's come on, or obviously, you know, the Ajax first half, I think he struggled, and he's just getting used to his role or what
he's
his role's
heading in, yeah, isn't he?
Yeah, it's difficult. In the same way Tielemans did, didn't he? And then obviously Tielemans clicked.
Yeah, right. International break.
I'm kind of glad of the break, to be honest.
So what are you going to do about it?
I'll get back to doing work.
Phil, looking forward to the international break?
No, I think I wouldn't have minded squeezing Wolves in on a midweek game just before the international break, just because when they're on their knees at the minute after Coventry put them out.
I enjoyed watching the second. I didn't watch the first half, but apparently Coventry were good, and the second half was FA Cup fireworks. It was brilliant.
Cov played really well as well.
Played some great football, and obviously young O'Hare played really well when he came off the bench.
Is he still young?
I don't think he is anymore, is he? He's kind of, he just feels young.
43.
But he's been doing really well for them. Yeah. He's been lying about it for ages. Yeah, they did well. They thoroughly deserved it. You know, obviously, it's a shame they get... Well, it was going to be a hard draw, whoever they got, but...
At home, they might have a chance against United. At Wembley, that might take it away from them.
Keeps United's season alive, this, doesn't it?
But to be fair, it's probably the easiest draw they could have got out of the three. I think Chelsea is probably harder than United.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. But the good news is it's a distraction for United as well, considering we will have distractions, because if they win their game in hand, and it is winnable, they will be 6 points behind us, smelling the blood. But we've got superior goal difference by far, so that's 7 points, 9 games left. I think that Wolves won if you win that, because everybody's got to play the big boys.
Yeah, and I just think psychologically, if you can have maybe one more weekend where you get a win and they drop points, just psychologically, you push it back to sort of double figures in the points gap, and you sort of think we should be all right here.
But still plenty to play for. It's officially the business end.
Yeah,
it's the end game. 9 games to go in the league. You're in the quarterfinals, so 4 more games potentially before we play in a final at Athens. I mean, it's a long way to go there, but the good thing about West Ham ultimately was it shows we can battle, and we'll need to battle and rescue. We've been rescuing points all season, to be fair. The Bournemouth one,
Luton,
then coming back from behind against Brentford and getting that one done.
Yep. Palace as well.
Palace, yep. That was a bit of a Coventry trick, that one.
Yep.
Because I think we will go to dark places by the time the final arrives, and I think we've got enough character to get us out of holes that we may find ourselves in, whether it's the quarterfinal or the semi-final. Intrigued to see Lille in the first game, actually.
I'm intrigued to see how Villa approach it, because, of course, we haven't had this dynamic, have we, of having to play at home first? This is a new one, is it?
Yeah, I mean, not new for Emery, obviously.
No, you know, I suppose in this scenario, he's kind of the guy you want.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have to think about it too much, and we don't really have to talk about it too much, because Emery's won four Europa League, so he's obviously had this issue multiple times, so... He knows, I think the key word is that he knows the mentality to adopt in this situation.
Yes.
Right. We will, still plenty of podcasts to come over this international break. There'll be mad few sessions. Enjoy the international week, but we will be speaking to you during it. Until then, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.